Thank you very much. And can I ask you to check your mobile phones whether they are switched off? And can you hear me at the back?
Is that better?
I prefer to speak without microphone. If you can hear me, yes. Yeah? Let's try.
I'm happy to hold it then.
Okay, really what I would like to talk is about mindfulness, meditation and science. And this is sort of two-way connection. And you have to know that at the moment there are three greatest remaining scientific questions. The first question is what caused the Big Bang? Nobody knows the answer. People can do a lot of things about Big Bang, but what caused it? Nobody knows. The second great question, which is now very much looked into, what is the grand unified theory that integrates quantum mechanics and general relativity? That's what is missing in physics. But the third question that I hope we are starting to address today is what is the relationship between the mind and the brain, especially regarding conscious experience? And in order to be able to do that, we have to have a reasonable working hypothesis. And the hypothesis is that mind is what the brain does. Now, I do not want to talk only about science in this talk, because we need to define what is mindfulness and also what is meditation. Lots of people have very strange, to my mind, idea about meditation. It usually involves a young weedy man eating yogurt and growing marijuana in the backyard. I think we really moved on from that picture. And mindfulness is now a buzzword that everybody is talking about, but we need to look really what it is. And what is the evidence? And as a scientist, I want measurable effects. I want something that I can quantify. There is a lot of qualitative evidence. I run meditation mindfulness courses at university, and lots of people after that come and say me, I am happier. It really helped me. But it's, you know, happier as compared to what? Of course, it's the state before and after, but we have a ways which are coming from psychology, and we have more objective ways coming from neuroscience, which can measure the changes which are happening in us internally using science. So we have medical science, psychology, and neuroscience, and I would like towards the end of the of this short talk to bring together East and West. And I would like to propose a short exercise before we break for the coffee. Okay, so what is mindfulness? It has three components. It has attention, intention, and attitude. And that is really a practical way of looking at it. And if people are talking, oh, you are being mindful, we don't quite often know what it is, but if they say you are being mindless, everybody knows what it is, yeah? And that's actually a pretty peculiar thing, because there are lots of psychological questionnaires which measure, they say they measure mindfulness, but really they measure mindlessness, because it's much easier for people to say, I don't pay attention to something on the scale from 0 to 5, than I pay attention on the scale 1 to 5. So that's the way that psychology works out around our twisted psychology. Meditation has to has two types. It's just the practice. There is nothing mystical, nothing esoteric about it. At the very basic level, it's just simply being, you know, sitting back and doing nothing. And now this is an anathema to a modern man, especially Western man, because we have to be busy. We have to prove we are doing something by being very busy, busy running all the time. And so if you sit back and say, I'm going to meditate for 20 minutes, you are somehow not belonging. So, but if we combine mindfulness and meditation, we get sort of new beast, if you like. And if you look at the one of the measures of the popularity of any given concept, of course, you are likely to go to the internet. Everything is on the internet nowadays. And so if you put an entry from mindfulness on internet, Google comes back with about 5 million results, which is rather sort of difficult to sort out in the lifetime. That's awesome. And so if we want to narrow the search, we can put entry like mindfulness meditation books, and this starts to be a little bit more manageable. You get something like 650 entries, which is still far too much for us. So how do we make sense out of that? And there is a leading icon on mindfulness. His name is Jon Kabat-Zinn, and I'm pretty sure people here have heard that name and know who he is. So what is mindfulness? Jon Kabat-Zinn defines it as paying attention on purpose in the present moment and non-judgmentally to the unfolding of experience moment to moment. Now, that's a beautiful definition, but it's pretty useless. We can't measure anything. How do I measure the unfolding moment? So we can get to the more quantitative way of looking at mindfulness if we look at mindfulness simply paying attention. And it can have internal focus, mindfulness of the body, or it can have external focus, such a flower arrangement or the famous Japanese tea ceremony. This is something where mindfulness play a great role. If you ever been to Japan and participated in one, or if you've seen it on the movie, it's every moment has its meaning. Every movement has its meaning. There is nothing superficial. It's absolutely beautiful. I understand that people learn about 10 years to be able to serve tea in the absolutely proper way. And there are four foundations of mindfulness, which is mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of sensations, mindfulness of the mind, and mindfulness of mind object. I finish with definitions. And now I can sort of link to the tradition where my meditation practice comes from. It's the Zen meditation, and this is very much based in the body. And it is something that we are using in a very secular setting, because Zen tradition comes from the Buddhist tradition, and the Buddhist tradition has a couple of things common with science, would you believe it or not? First of all, there is no God. So there is no religious conflict for people who want to learn the meditation. Secondly, both science and Zen are experiential. We don't do theory. We just go into our body and practice. And science and experience is qualified by what you feel. Science is also experiential. Any theory has to be proved by experiment. And now comes the big difference. Because meditation experience are pretty different from person to person. We cannot reproduce them exactly. And science relies on reproducibility. So we are looking at something which is linked, but not exactly the same. I think it's very important to bear it in mind when we look at the evidence, how science supports meditation and mindfulness. And so meditation is, roughly speaking, of two sorts. One has narrow focus on concentration, and that can be used using mantra or images. Or the other end of the spectrum is insight, which is like opening yourself wide and being open to all experiences which come. But what you do, you don't hang on to them. You let them come, grow, die, and go. And you let go. And lots of meditation types are in between. And Zen is by no means the only meditation tradition. There are many others, and people may be experienced with them or may find them more appealing. That's fine. But the distinctive feature of the Zen Rinzai tradition, to which in my private life I belong, is teaching meditation for well-being and also outside monastic setting. So the teaching on well-being, the teaching how to look after your body, how to look after your mind, is given equally to monastics and lay people. There is no difference. And that is actually very important, because not everybody has time or inclination to go and spend years in the temple. I mean, there are some people who may do that. But what we really want, we want to be happy and effective and being good social beings in a lay setting, in our busy lives. And that's what we can get from this tradition. And at this point in my talk, I have to ask you one question. Why bother? I always ask my students that. Why do we bother to do that? And the answer is that a key skill in meditation mindfulness is to train the mind with concentration so it can stay where you put it. You cannot control your mind, but you can guide it. And the point of concentration meditation is to learn how to bring your mind back calmly and gently without berating yourself back where you want it to be. That sounds easy, but it isn't, believe me. And the great benefit of that is that we learn how to cut out distractions and that we can stay with a job much longer and do the job much faster because we have no distractions. And job is of any time, of from sweeping the streets, of to treating the patient, of to writing the paper and studying for your exams. That's all the jobs. There is no difference between menial and mental jobs. And so we get this focus. From focus comes clarity, also comes more energy because we are not dissipating it on useless things. And also, for some people, for many people actually, what comes with it is insight. It's insight into relationships, insight into life, insight into actually why I'm here, insight in, oh, the universe is beautiful, you know. I don't care about the rest. I just look at the stars and I'm happy. All sort of insights. And what we can do with it, we cannot change the facts. In our lives, we can have pain, we can have bereavement, everything. We cannot change that. But we can change the way we look at it. We can change our perspective. And that's the great benefit of meditation, and that can be measured. And so, in a way, meditation is about changing the mind states. Mind you, you can do also in chemical way. I mean, people certainly heard about drugs like LSD and so, which can induce absolutely wonderful states. Unfortunately, I do not have first-hand experience. I missed out on that. When I came to Britain, it was illegal. So, being a dutiful citizen, I haven't tried it. But people tell me it's really quite like some meditative states. I have to believe that. But also, when we do meditation over a long period, our character can change. We from the change of state, which is temporary and decaying, everything changes, we can go into changing character traits. And so there is a clear benefit. And prescription how to measure character traits that does not exist. This is subjective, but also your friends and family can tell you are so much nicer person now than 2 years ago, whatever. And so mind is linked to the brain, and you can see the mind as software and brain as hardware. So the software cannot run without hardware, and hardware without software is useless. Yes? And it's only an analogy. If we look at the effects of mindfulness in traditional psychology is sort of measuring negative, starting from the negative point of view, looking at disorders, looking at anxiety, looking at depression, looking at fear. And also, in sort of 1970s, 1980s, doctors in America noticed that chronic pain can induce depression. And it was actually Jon Kabat-Zinn. He, for young people here, he was a postdoc at the time, and so he just hit the right subject and became the world authority in 30 years from there. So there is always a scope to become a world authority if you start early enough. And that was actually an important development. That was really what shaped the landscape of mindfulness and meditation. Practical application, and there were thousands of patients who went through the program. There was a program of 10 weeks meditation program and supported by yoga. And the finding were really mind-blowing. It was something like, you know, cut in drug use, considerable cut in drug use, less relapse into anxiety and depression. Also, people who were leading much more active lives, and also their self-image has improved. They were sort of accepting where they are, and they were able to work with their bodies much better. So it's absolutely fantastic. Think about it, how much well-being was created that way. And of course, you know, an economist in me says, and think of the money saved for the public services. But we have to be careful. If anybody tells you that meditation is cure at all, don't believe it. This person is a charlatan. Because what we really need, if we look at the sickness, we need something like a tripod when we want to come back to health and well-being. One leg is pharmaceuticals, the other leg is surgery and other procedures, and the third leg is self-care, and that's where meditation comes in. And actually, that was Herbert Benson, who is a father of mind-body medicine. He was looking at relaxation response, which he includes that. And from America, we came to Britain, and actually, this is work of Professor Mark Williams from Oxford Mindfulness Center, who really took the part of the work further, and especially in dealing with depression. He has absolutely great results, and he published a book about living in the frantic world, which I understand is very popular. And these programs, which is called mindfulness-based cognitive therapy or another type, has one characteristic. Meditation there is completely secular, but it's also completely divorced from any roots in any meditation tradition. And that's the pro of it is, of course, that it is accessible to many people. It becomes like an exercise. If you exercise well, you can have results. It's like yoga, which is divorced for many people from spiritual background. But if people start to feel there is something more that they are missing and want, this program doesn't give them an opening. They come to the wall, and what next? There is nothing there. So what we are doing in the program, which I have in Oxford University, which was set up together with a Zen master, is that we do secular meditation oriented for well-being, but we leave this opening. We set it in the Zen tradition, so you know there is more there. Would you wish that? So, measurable outcomes, I will talk for a few more minutes, and then I think we break because there is quite a lot of research which will be better in a way to discuss. But we need a sort of model how to measure mindfulness. And there is a very recent paper which tries to put theoretical model how to measure it, and one of the ways is to look at the body awareness. And that is actually something we can measure psychologically through questionnaire, which is called 5 Facets of Mindfulness. And we have a project at University of Oxford. I have a project with Professor Marianne Martin from Experimental Psychology. So we do a series of questionnaires before the course and after the course, and we look at the results. So what we want to find out is whether and how mindfulness meditation enhances psychological well-being and overall life satisfaction of participants. And our first results are very, very encouraging. The project now runs for 1 year. We have 4 more years to run. We found significant decrease in perceived stress. And, you know, people are very stressed nowadays, and that can be a health danger if the levels are high. We found that they have increased mindfulness And we also find that they have increased awareness of their bodies. And for academics, it's terribly important because we live here. And that depletes us. We want to be in our bodies and be happy with our bodies. So that's where we stand, and that's how we do that. And just to round up this part of the talk, what we have is that the 5-facet mindfulness questionnaire covers the awareness of body sensations. For instance, question, when I'm walking, I'll deliberately notice the sensation of my body moving. Hearing, smelling, seeing, interoceptions, which is sensitivity to stimuli originating inside of the body, thought, and emotions. And then, from the literature, what we can find out that associated brain areas are insula and temporoparietal junction. Now, that's a mouthful, isn't it? But we have a model of the brain here. We have pictures, and we can also have pictures from the computer, so we can find out where this region in the brain is there. And so, what are benefits of meditation? Increased concentration, general psychological well-being, and there are studies which show that it increases with the length of practice, increase in empathy. There was a study done for medical and pre-medical students. Very important. If I go to the hospital, I really want to be sure that the doctor can empathize with me. And slower aging and longevity. Cognition, bliss, and joy. So, and of course, we have measurable changes in the brain. Is that all right now to break for?
That sounds like a very good place to break. I suspect probably that there are going to be things, as Barbara said, she can expand on a bit more, depending on which way all the questions go, but that's a really nice start. Thank you very much.